Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
Hey, After Buzzers, on this episode of the MasterChef After Show, it is a double dose of MasterChef goodness. We're breaking down five-star food and hot potato. Let's do it.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Yeah, we got the lights, we got the sounds. Check it out. The sweet sounds of MasterChef India playing us in.
I wish I knew some, like,
I want to watch the show. Yeah! Look
wow.
at that. That is awesome. I mean, I love MasterChef, but man, MasterChef India, that is a theme song.
I'm not
going
to lie,
right
that kind of just made my night.
Yes. Welcome, everybody, to the MasterChef After Show here on AfterBuzz TV. That was the MasterChef India song that you were hearing playing right there. That, and man, I just want to go to India and watch this show.
Yes. That is amazing.
We're going to be breaking down, as I said, two episodes this week because it is a double dose of goodness. They've been off for the past 2 weeks because of the Olympics. Now they're back bigger than ever. I believe this week and next week are two-hour episodes.
So. Oh, and next week. Okay.
Yes, we got to catch
ready,
up.
Get your DVRs.
That's right. I'm one of your hosts, Frank Moran. You can follow me on Twitter at HappyGoJackie. And the reason that we all come here every single week, I was even here even when we were off on for the Olympics just because I was hoping that Maria Provenzano would show up as well.
Okay, he's lying. But no, I am Maria Provenzano. You can find me on Twitter at Maria Provenzano, and all my information will be there.
And as always, Maria is kind enough to more often than not bring us some delicious treats, whether it be baked goods, some food, things like that. This week, Maria, what did you regale us
with? So they think I'm being kind, but they're really my guinea pigs because I am in the cookbook writing process, so I need feedback. This one was, I don't know if it was a fail. I don't really know. It's kind of a hit or miss. I don't know. But they're biscotti, and they're pumpkin biscotti. And I kid you not, so I want to know from people in the chat if you like pumpkin, because I have not met so many people in one room that didn't like pumpkin. I was just like, how? I thought everybody liked pumpkin.
People that say they don't like pumpkin are people I don't want to be around.
I'm just amazed.
No.
Yeah, Daryl, who he's in charge of Black Hollywood Live, he's like, I don't like pumpkin. I'm like, but I like lemon. I'm like, okay, I'll make you my lemon poppy seed pound cake. Just to make you happy in life.
No. So, I mean, this is not just a pumpkin biscotti, but it's also got chocolate chips in there as
chocolate.
Well.
Mm-hmm. Oh. But I do have a biscotti recipe on my website, but this one's just because it's not perfected yet. It's not on anything.
I take no insult to being a guinea pig for Maria's food. I would do that every single day.
Well, thank you.
No problem whatsoever. Now, as Maria said about chiming in on the chat, folks, if you want to reach out to us, you can like us on Facebook. You can give us 5 stars on iTunes. You can also subscribe to the YouTube channel. Maria has the chat up right now. We love to have you interacting during the course of the episode. Share your opinions about what you saw for this two-hour episode. Ask Maria any kind of cooking questions or about any of the meals that you saw them prepare or just food in general. We'll just chime in along the way, answer your questions as we break down these two episodes.
Well, Christopher on our chat says that they love pumpkin. So, me too. Who doesn't? Very strange.
I had to learn to put smaller bites in my mouth. That's one thing I'll learn through the course of this episode.
I've also seen you put an entire giant piece of cake in your mouth. That I will never forget that. Okay, so Christopher doesn't like sweet potato. Really? I love sweet potato. I think I love everything.
I'm not a huge sweet potato person.
Oh, my God. Really? Even sweet potato fries? Oh, my gosh.
Okay. I feel like it's almost too much like they're too sweet for me. And I like my fries to be savory.
I just love sweet potato. I love sweet potato, anything. Ugh. My mom makes savory, so at a holiday, at Thanksgiving.
So how about that episode, guys?
Yeah, yep. Sorry. Go ahead, Frank. How do we get started on this?
So we are starting off here with five-star food. Of course, it's our top nine competing. And we see at this point, I mean, we've been off for a couple weeks, so we may have kind of forgotten how some of the contestants are doing. And we've kind of talked a little bit about David before we took the break there, where we really haven't seen him standing out. And certainly his strategy was to kind of just rest in the middle of the pack and then kind of spring out at the last moment. But we see it's kind of backfiring because his confidence, as he even admits, is kind of wavering at this point.
He was a baby through this whole thing. He was just a big baby. I hated even watching him. to be honest with you. Yeah, it was driving me crazy. I'm like, you just suck it up. You're on MasterChef.
Because I have not seen him do like anything tremendously terrible for him to have such like a crisis of confidence. Because he felt like he was just, I don't deserve to be here. Yeah. You know, what am I doing? What's going on? And I can see why you're saying that. It kind of gets annoying at some point.
That I wasn't, like, I mean, just as a viewer, I was just like, you know how people wish they could be there and this is how you're acting? Like, it's not okay.
No, I mean, other talented people have left. You should be excited that you are still in the competition. Yeah. I know one person still excited is Nathan. Nathan, he's unexpectedly still in this competition, but still excited to be there.
Frank doesn't like Nathan. If you haven't figured that one out.
Not a huge fan. Let's just take off the suit coat and lose the... You can keep the bow tie if you want, but just lose the suit coat when you're cooking. Come on. That's just too much. It's too cumbersome.
He did mention something in the segment about... Or in the segment, in the show about how he was hot in his tux at one point.
I can't feel bad for you at all. You put yourself in the situation. Yeah. Get it together, Nathan. Now, this season, as we've talked about, they've had rotating guest judges.
Oh, yeah.
So we've had, you know, Kevin Aaron Sanchez. We've had Wolfgang Puck.
Who I love.
Yes. This week, for this two episodes, we've got Kevin Sbraga, known for his refined American food.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had any of his food?
I have not. No.
And I don't know, is he located on the West Coast or East Coast? I do not know about
him. I actually don't know much about him, to be totally honest with you. Like, when they had him on, I was kind of like, oh, I don't know who he is. This is going to be new to me, I guess.
Yeah, admittedly, it was cool to see some really elite chefs come in here to be his guest judges. That was kind of a nice little hook for this season. But admittedly, Kevin Sprague, I didn't know anything about him, so he didn't really offer much to me this episode.
I feel like, and I didn't learn much about him, and besides that, he makes really gourmet food. That was all I really walked away with.
Yeah, and I mean, certainly he is there to introduce, of course, the Mystery Box Challenge. And this time, they're doing some high end restaurant dining. That was a challenge. So top end quality ingredients that Christina and Gordon had chosen, and Kevin was going to cook alongside with them. So what I do like is that he just jumps right into it. So I got to respect him for that. He's going to cook in front of everybody else.
Yeah, well, and that's what all the chefs have done when they came in. I mean, Christina did it. Gordon's done it. Like, everybody's done it. But I was really excited to see what people were going to do with these gourmet ingredients. I thought it was really exciting to see it had the lamb and the black cod and all these, the chickpeas. I thought that was really interesting, the green ones. So, like, it was just a... I thought it was challenging, but also fun. People who love food would love to cook with these ingredients.
I don't know if everybody felt like that, because certainly Terry said he hasn't dealt with a lot of these ingredients. Mm-hmm. And I think many people may have felt in that same situation where they may love to cook, but they've never cooked outside maybe their comfort zone, so to speak.
I felt like that even looking at some of the ingredients, that I would not have known what to do with some of them.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do you approach something like that if you're in a situation where you're given ingredients you've never really cooked with before, you don't know much about? Are you willing to just kind of wing it and see what you can do with it?
That's what Brandy ended up doing. She impressed me, and that's what even Gordon Ramsay said. He was just like, you know, watching her, she's just really going with instinct. So I think you know how fish tastes, you know how meat tastes, and I think, you know, you obviously all chefs taste as they go along as well, and by smell, and I mean, she's had, I'm sure, lamb before, but maybe not like this high end or whatever the case may be, but a lot of it is going with feelings. You know, certain things go with each other. So, and what I thought was cool was the vintage red wine that they had. Because rarely do you ever cook with vintage red wine because it's so expensive. So you drink it. You want to cook with what you drink, but you rarely would take like half a cup or so of expensive vintage red wine and like braise lamb in it.
Unless you really like the person.
Unless and you have lots of money.
Yeah, because I feel like if you're cooking savory dishes, things like that. Mm-hmm. It's easier maybe to kind of wing it. And if you're baking or doing some kind of desserts, it's not easy to wing it because it's so scientific.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yes.
So we see that, even like Gordon, his idea was like, hey, have we pushed them too far too fast? Mm-hmm. And I guess the idea was like, no, by this point in the competition, we want to push them out of the kind of, I don't want to say ruts, but their go-tos, their safety zones that they always kind of cook within.
Right. And that's what they did. I mean, we saw it, like we said, we saw it with Terry. And the thing is, like, you look at the difference between Terry, who says he never cooks with expensive ingredients, and Brandy, who never cooks with expensive ingredients, and who excelled. You know what I mean? So that's what I think shows people's true abilities, which is what they're looking for.
I always feel that criticism, though, is such a fine line to walk for the contestants. Because, like, as Gordon says, we want them to be more daredevil.
Okay.
And so sometimes when, and I guess maybe it's if they're cooking within things that they know about, and they kind of just do something wild. Like, and not a great example, but of just the idea where Dan put his little weird anchor that he made on the side of the cake. I mean, he was just going outside the box or doing something a little different for him. But yet, it's also they're kind of admonished for doing that.
Yeah, that's true.
It seems like at times they want you to push the envelope, and other times they want you to adhere to just creating such a classic dish. And it's hard. Yeah. I think it's hard for a cook to know, or a contestant to know, when do I push and do something just crazy, and then when do I just try to play it safe and play within the kind of this box.
I think it's crazy to put an anchor out of pretzels on your cake. That's not even a good anchor. But I think what they mean is just to try something maybe that you haven't done before. And I know we'll talk about it later in the episode with David. But I think it's just trying something and really just instead of making one dish, making two dishes or something like that. You know, really trying to show what you're capable of.
Yeah, and I'm gonna hold that point for a second here. I'm gonna get back into this as we get into the elimination challenge.
Yeah.
Because I have some thoughts. I feel like they kind of reflect how the elimination challenge played out as well.
Okay.
So we see them, Katie's inspired by all these ingredients. And David, he has to get a little pep talk from Gordon because he's like, oh, I don't know. I don't know what I'm gonna do.
But so annoying. I'm sorry. And I never, it was disappointing as a viewer. To watch somebody boohoo like that.
Yeah.
So,
In fact, after they finish and they call time, they call David up first because as Gordon says, we want to see if this person has his head in the game.
Well, and his food looked beautiful.
Yeah.
He's talented.
And I do like as they walk up that he's from Vegas. Also, Sean is from Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And Sean, they put his bites as he's walking up that he's not scared.
Yeah.
He doesn't see David as a threat. He thinks the two people from Vegas, he's the top dog.
Yeah.
And when David, he does tandoori black cod. And the chefs love it, the judges. And I do like that he has a moment where he kind of breaks down a little bit.
I was sitting there. I was like, don't cry. Don't cry. Don't cry. And Christina's like, I don't know. You guys, let me know. I need to go back into our chat and hear and see if anybody is commenting on that. Because it was just what did you think, Frank?
Well, I wanted to, because every time I watch a show, I think of a million questions that I want to ask Maria as I'm watching this. And Christine throws out this comment to David as he kind of breaks down about this. And says, to be a great chef, you have to be a great failure.
Yeah.
And that's why we push you.
Yeah.
We want you to get to these points where you can do something that you didn't even think you were capable of.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe in that kind of philosophy that Christine's saying there?
Well, you have to fail. Yes. Is that what you mean? You have to... Oh God, I wish I could remember this exact quote, but that I just heard, but that failure is something disguised in disappointment. But basically, you need to fail in order to be better. And you need to be that's why the people who make it, Gordon Ramsay talks about when he was a sous chef and when he was, building who he is now, he basically was beat down and he always put himself back together and brought himself back up. It was be better. Just wait, we all get smacked down. And you just, it's the ones who are capable of picking themselves back up. And in that moment, I wasn't sure if he was going to. He's sitting there pouting. It's like, get your game face on, man. I just, like I said, as a viewer, as maybe a child or a teenager who wants to be a chef is watching this and you're not being a role model.
No, I mean, and I guess it's tough for anybody that if you have that kind of crisis of confidence in yourself, I don't know. I mean, but you still want to feel like. I feel like that's when the doors are closed.
Yeah.
Then have that moment of vulnerability. Like, oh, man, I don't know if we can do it.
It's one thing to have that, and I think it's okay. But it was everything, I think, prior to that that made me not have sympathy for him. And that's what they're saying in the chat. Christopher is like, David equals pity party. And that's what it was. I don't know what that was. It was just very strange.
The second dish that they bring up is Sean's, who, again, claims that he brought Vegas to MasterChef. That's it. I brought Vegas to MasterChef. Check me out. He did a lamb belly and black cod with a little balsamic reduction and baby heirloom tomatoes.
Well, so what they said is that they didn't think it was going to go together. The black cod, which can be very oily, and then the lamb, which is very meaty. He's like, it's not supposed to go together, but you made it work. I thought it looked great.
And then the last one is they bring up Brandy because you know she's just playing it off. You know she's just kind of just going off the cuff for this. And she did Tantori Black Cod, the sautéed octopus, and the squash blossoms. And it seemed like the only real criticism they had there is that they thought the octopus could have been a little bit better done.
Yeah, they said it was a little still not as soft as they would have liked it to be, but. Braising anything in that amount of time, I think, would be tough.
Now, just based on the three dishes that you saw there and just with the judges' reactions that you did see, who would you think was going to win that?
I mean, I think from their reactions, Sean. But looking at everything, I mean, it's that one's tough because I actually do think all of them looked really good. I think the most appealing one was David because it was so bright.
And thinking about, like, that the little mini arc that he was having during the course of that Mystery Box Challenge, I thought, like, all right, he's down in the lowest of lows, and all of a sudden he wins, so he's at the highest highs. But it didn't turn out that way. You're right. They were leaning towards Sean, and that's who wins the Mystery Box Challenge.
So, and then David was disappointed.
Yes.
Wah, wah. So sad.
And then he sobbed. You hear him sobbing as they're walking to the back.
No. Oh, my God. You are a grown person. I don't want to say you're a grown man, because men are allowed to cry. But come on.
Get it together, David. Now, Sean, he gets an advantage as one of the Master Chef.
Excuse me.
Bless you. Right. Clearly, Maria has developed an allergy to me and our time away. So Sean's advantage is they're going to be cooking with fish. And the fish they're going to be cooking with is salmon.
Yes.
Now, there are two choices there. You can have a nice, big, fresh, whole hunk of fish, fresh salmon right there, just fresh out of the water. To cut and slice up and portion and everything and cook with that. Or you can have a little can of tuna or a can of salmon that Gordon used to use when he was in France. And he opens it up. Yeah, 3 seconds, open it up, dumps it over. Smells terrible.
But can I tell you, when you said tuna, when they said before they brought everything out and they said the most, most popular, most... Oh, my God, you guys, I can't even think of words. But basically, the most popular but most edible. That's not what I'm looking for. People eat it the most. Fish. Yes. Try to figure out what I'm saying here, Frank. but people eat this fish the most.
Most consumed?
Yes. Yeah, there you go. Sure. That's what I was trying to say. Right. It's one of those days. But, yes, I thought it was going to be tuna. Did you not?
No, I thought it was going to be salmon.
I thought it was going to be tuna because people eat canned tuna all the time.
Yeah, but I don't know if people eat... I think people eat a lot of canned tuna, but do a lot of people eat canned... I mean, like fresh tuna.
Yeah, I mean, I think I see it in restaurants frequently, but I mean, if you're doing can-to-can, I think tuna would win.
Yeah, can-to-can tuna would win for sure, but I think fish-to-fish, salmon?
Okay. Salmon, yeah, people would probably order salmon.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Let us know in the chat. We want to know what you guys think.
Tuna v.
Who's
salmon.
Who's crazy?
Get in on it. So now, since there are 8 people competing, Sean is not going to compete. He gets to choose which 4 of the contestants are going to cook with real fresh salmon and which 4 would be cooking with the canned salmon. And they just go down the list, and he just kind of starts naming them off there. And his strategy was like he really wanted to test people that he thought were big challenges to him in the competition.
Yeah, and that was – before he was like, I just want to get out the weak links, and now I'm going to just challenge the people who are good, who I see as a threat.
Which, I mean, I guess there's at any time you're playing a game, there's 2 philosophies of that. One, do you want to take the strongest to the end so that you feel like you beat the best? Or do you want to eliminate any potential threats so that way you don't have to worry about potentially losing the competition if you think you've got a real shot at winning it?
I just say beat the best of the best. But that's I don't know. I've never been in one of these things. But I think I can see – I can see wanting to win, too. It's all about having, like – you want to win that money.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I can't fault anybody for their particular strategy. I mean, the game invites.
It's a game.
Yeah. It's not just a, yeah.
That's true.
They're out, everybody's competing.
And you never know. They kind of probably push for drama too. So.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think in your head, everybody in their head think like, oh, I'd play it honorably. And then I'd make sure that I kept the strongest people around me so I could show that I was the real master chef.
Well, yeah, right?
But I think that's easy to say when you're sitting at home watching it on TV.
Well, exactly. I'm sorry, I have to interrupt a little bit because in the chat. Misha goes, there's nothing wrong with canned salmon. Salmon croquette with grits is good. It's good at breakfast time. And then they asked me about, is canned tuna gourmet? I like canned tuna.
Really?
I do. But I mean, like, they make actually really good quality canned tuna. I don't like the stuff that, like, falls apart when you open it. It's, like, actually looks like... tuna fillet or whatever. I I like canned tuna.
But you just open it up and just eat it right
there? No, I mix it. I like put a lot of stuff. I actually have a recipe on my website. But looky there. But I add like lots of lemon. I add actually grainy mustard I love. I take cornichons, which are the small pickles, and like chop them up really small. And that has that like briny taste.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
Anyways, right. But yeah. So no, I have not had canned salmon though.
I see they sell it like at Trader Joe's and things like that, and I've never picked it up.
I have not.
But given the way that Gordon reacted as he opened it and it kind of fell on the plate, I'm like, I don't know if that smell.
I don't plan on it. It didn't. They didn't make it look good. So.
Strong makes his choices, and he decides that Eric, Nathan, Brandy, and Katie will be dealing with the fresh salmon.
Yes.
And Dan, Terry, Tenoria, and David will be dealing with the canned salmon. Mm-hmm. Pretty good choices there. I feel like that's a good distinction between the top dogs and kind of like the weaker links.
Yes.
In terms of who got which ingredient to work with. Now, of course, Nathan, freaking out as he's even picking up the salmon, taking it back to his table and starting to cut it open. Ugh, Nathan. And then Eric is having a tough time filleting it as well. I feel like a lot of people, because how many people in your life have given a full salmon and then expect to be able to do something with it?
And I was surprised that they did such a nice job. I mean, you saw him taking the bones out and actually taking the scales off and all of that. The knife work with fish, it's not as hard as like butchering meat, but it's still technique.
I don't know if it's like one of those things, I don't know if I would want to ever have to like fillet a fish like that. Just because of all the steps, it seems like it's so time consuming. Yeah. Like pinning the bones and all like, oh.
Well, you can bake it whole.
And then But yeah, we still have to worry about the bones, don't
you? Yeah, there's like a way after you bake it and cook it and stuff. They do this in like fancy restaurants, but where like they actually will cook it whole and then they'll bring it out to you. And it depends on which way they cook it. But they'll actually bring it out to you. And then they'll like the way they take it off, it like takes the bones out as well.
Ooh.
So at the end, you see like the fish with all the bones in it. I don't know how they do it, but there's like a technique to it.
Oh, it reminds me of like those cartoons where you just put a whole fish in your mouth and pull it out and it's just the skeleton right there. Just like that? Okay, that's what I thought. As they're cooking, Gordon stops the clock with 10 minutes left. And he says, Sean's got one more advantage. And that is he can save any one of you folks right now and bring you up on the balcony right there. Were you surprised by who Sean picked?
No, I think him and Eric seem to be buds. I think everybody kind of likes Eric. So
yeah, so he picks Eric, and as he says, he doesn't see Eric as a threat at this time.
Yeah.
And I think that's I could agree with that.
I think that's a fair estimate, yeah.
So if you like the guy and you know he's not a threat, why not give him throw him a fish bone?
Yeah. Wow.
That's right. So we see when they get out there is Tenoria made salmon two ways. So, okay, that was great. And it did not go over very well.
No.
I felt bad for that. I mean, she had the canned tuna. I bet with a canned tuna, I don't know if they felt like the criticism on them is they didn't elevate it enough. Like, how much can you do with it?
A lot of people fried it, which I feel like they thought is... And I tried to, like, boggle my mind because I don't know. And, people in the chat, if you use canned tuna, maybe the fact that it was canned made it harder to be something, good... to do something good with. It's tough because I only know how to cook, or I only know canned tuna, and you can eat that just out of the can, whatever. I don't know if you can do that with canned salmon, because when we get to Terry, obviously, they said you're not supposed to bake it. So I'm like, what do you do with it? Yeah. Like, was frying the only option?
I guess, yeah. I would have thought, like, why couldn't you bake it? Like, if you make a casserole, you bake a casserole, right? And so if you used it, because like a tuna casserole, you would bake a tuna casserole, right?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, is it just because of the oil content or something like that?
Why didn't they do a salmon casserole? Frank, you should have been on the show.
Oh, my gosh. I'd be sitting under that balcony right now.
I feel like that's what Terry... Oh, so Tenoria, they said it was like the ugliest plate he had seen from her.
Yes.
I kind of felt bad for her.
Yeah, she did not do well. I mean, it was a... Because I felt like a lot of them went the salmon croquette. The croquette route seemed to be the preferred choice on everybody who had to deal with the canned stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And surprisingly, everybody that had the fresh fish, they did fine. Everything
was... Because, look, basics of the ingredients. Just what is a good ingredient? Fresh salmon is going to be better than canned salmon. And how do you... Basically, with canned salmon, all you're trying to do is mask the flavor of the canned salmon. Misha, you can tell us how you make your your canned salmon really good. So that's what I'm kind of, I don't know. I mean, bare basics of cooking is letting the ingredients shine.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
It's tough because all the fresh fish do well. And then when it gets down, our two people that used the canned tuna, it was Tenoria who kind of bombed out, but then also Terry. He did salmon cakes and a baked salmon crostini. Basically, Gordon said it was dreadful. You don't put time with salmon and you don't bake it.
Yeah.
And this is the thing that irritated me. And going back to what we've talked about before, Gordon's comment, it says it's almost like you've gone backwards with this dish. It's like, can't you just have a bad night?
Yeah, that's true. He hasn't had anything bad, has he? Has he been in the bottom yet? No.
And so, I mean, it's like, and it's a game, it's a competition, and I guess they can only really judge on the dish that's in front of them, which is, I think is so tough. Because, as we're saying, like, as Christine says, like, you have to be a great chef, you have to be a great failure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to knock Terry out on a dish that's this terrible, and it's one bad dish, who says that he doesn't come back stronger than ever, fueled with just like a purpose? And
with
just
one failure, even though Katie's been in the bottom how many times?
Yes. And she's come back and back again without anything that remarkable to still be put back in the bottom all the time. It was a little frustrating because it gets down to Terry and Tenoria.
I know. Well, the two people who should be in the top.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we've both been thinking that Terry had a chance to really go the distance in this competition. And it's a shame to see it because at this point, you know you're losing a really strong contender.
I still want to eat the pie he made.
Oh, yes.
Like, that pie was amazing.
And it's like, that's a frustration to this because you know it's a game, there are rules, you can't manipulate the competition, otherwise it just loses its integrity. So you can't say like, well, this week we've got a judge's save. All of a sudden you whip out at the last second because you know they're two strong cooks.
Right.
So, I mean, sadly the way the game is structured, you are forced to, even if you really love these chefs and think they're incredibly talented and they just had an off night, you've got to cut one.
Well, it was
them.
Just like Andrea.
Yes.
She made the best dish that night for this sausage, and she had to leave because she didn't make it there in time, and those are the rules. So it's like if we bend for her, it's just showing, you know, this is a competition.
Yeah, we lose all its integrity because you're basically telling everybody else, like, we think these two are going to win or have the potential winning, the rest of you guys really don't. So we're going to save these guys and wait till you guys fall away.
Got it.
So between Terry and Tenoria, based on what you saw, were you surprised that Terry went home?
Not based on the dishes. Just a few bare bones of the dishes, and I think secretly they maybe see more in her because she has won more and has kind of like since the beginning been doing well. Based on the dishes, yeah, I think between the two, Terry should probably have gone. That baked crostini dip thing that he made looked terrible, but I legitimately was sad.
It was. It's a shame. And at least in seasons past, there have been moments, usually when it gets down to the top 10, that as chefs get eliminated that have certainly shown potential, have really impressed the judges, occasionally they will offer some sort of consolation, some kind of token gesture of appreciation for them. Like, hey, we think you're really talented. You just need a little bit more seasoning. Come work at one of my restaurants. Call me up anytime you've got a job. So far, we haven't seen any of that this season.
No, not at all.
And for like Andrea, I thought for sure we'd see something like that, and we didn't. And then especially with Terry. I mean, they have done that in the past. Where they've raved so much about his food, too, that I thought, like, man, you're just going to let him walk out the door and that's it? You're not going to be like, hey, give us a call or anytime. So I was kind of bummed about that. So that leaves us with our top eight, and it only gets hotter from there.
Oh, my God.
Woo, we can turn up the heat.
You guys.
You're welcome.
Okay, we'll get into it.
Oh,
we'll get into it.
Oh, yes. Yeah. All right. Because our second hour is called Hot Potato. And this is basically just a skills test. And it was kind of cool.
I loved it.
Yeah.
By the way.
This was a series of three skills challenges. And so with eight chefs competing, the first skills test, whoever had the best four dishes, we're going to move on, be safe. The other four move on to the second skills challenge. The best two are safe. The final two face the elimination challenge. And then one goes home. So kind of cool.
Yes. Can I tell you something that was not cool?
All right.
The way that they introed it, the way that they're all black.
Yes.
And then they have Christina there and Chef Kevin, like, and the way they do the shot, and it was so serious and like, oh my God. Like, and Christina, I'm sorry. It's like, it's so hard to take her seriously when she was doing that because it was so forced on, like, she's not that person. You see, like, Gordon Ramsay, like, just himself, but she was just like, well, I can't even think of like the dialogue. She's just like talking about, well, you'll be cooking here, and like she's in this black dress under this like spot. I'm just like, oh my God, this is happening. This is happening. It was so, did you like it?
No, it was okay. It was corny the way they like, would you like it if I said, Maria, I thought that was the best part of the entire episode.
It's your opinion, it's valid. Your opinion is valid.
They really hammed it up. for this. It was not great. But they basically, it was like, you're going to be cooking with one of the most simplest ingredients, and you've got to create magic with it. And if you can't create magic with this, then you don't deserve the title of Master Chef.
So here's my question for you, Frank. So this is all about technique, the cut of the fry and, you know, the texture of this and da-da-da. So it doesn't give them a lot of artistic freedom, which is okay. This is more technical. A lot of the other dishes are artistically their own thing. When the beginning of the way this season or this show started for this season, you said it was different than any other season prior. The prior way for people to get in was like competing against, was this the way you kind of would compete?
When the first, I think the first two seasons the show started out here, they would do a lot of technical challenges.
Like tonight.
Like this.
Okay.
And they would, they'd have everybody in this really long table and they'd be like slicing onions or cutting potatoes or whatever like that. And the judges would walk down and look at their technique and they'd just start tapping people out if they didn't like their technique, just cutting them out there until they got down to their final 20 of whoever's going to compete for the title.
Whereas this year was more artistic freedom, where here we want you to make risotto. Who had the best risotto? We want you to make cupcakes. Who had the best cupcakes? Out of two people or out of four people or something like that. So that's what's so interesting to me. So when I was watching this challenge, I was wondering, and I couldn't wait to ask you, if that's how it was in some of the past seasons.
Yeah, and so I guess it's interesting to, at this point, to all of a sudden pull out a skills test. Because even if you look at like Top Chef and stuff, if they do a skills test, they do it very early in the season. And that's a way for everybody to kind of size each other up.
Okay.
So interesting for this to go all the way so deep into the competition, and then, hey, guess what? We're doing a skills test. It's like, oh, wow. All right.
I do think they should have done this earlier.
Yeah.
Would have weeded out certain people, probably.
So the idea is they'll be working with the potato. Would you agree?
The humble potato.
Yes. One of the simplest ingredients, but you've got to be able to create magic with it.
It's like eggs. Potatoes, eggs, like butter. There's so many things that are very simple. You can really – they're so versatile.
Would you say it's they're very simple but very easy to not execute well?
Exactly. Yes. I know everyone loves mashed potatoes, but they're very – people find this out on Thanksgiving. They're not as easy to work with as you think. So
no, you know, but I guess – but I also feel like mashed potatoes are something that's like a – well, I guess with anything. Any of these, like the potato – well, specifically the potato with the french fries and the mashed potato. I think there's also a matter of personal preference.
Yes, but I think because of the way that they – I think talk about it and like the, because they all did the same thing. They couldn't, they didn't say give us your version of french fries, because I like french fries that have like the skin on them because they are kind of crunchy, you know, and I like them when they're, you know, whatever different sizes, or shoestring fries. I love shoestring french fries. So they didn't give them that option. You see everybody did everything the same. And so I think that was the same with the mashed potatoes, and they wanted them to be a certain, they're not like, because I love chunky mashed potatoes. I don't know about you.
Yes.
I love chunky. I just smash them up because I do have a potato ricer and I use it when I make gnocchi, but it's such a pain to get out. So if I make mashed potatoes, I just use a potato masher because it's easier.
Yeah. It's like, I like to have those chunks in there.
Yeah.
I think it just, you know, I mean, not to say that I don't enjoy like a nice, really creamy, smooth mashed potato as well, but I am not going to knock a mashed potato because it has lumps in it. And I felt like, and I guess that's right, if they're thinking if they had their vision of what they consider the technical challenge to create this mashed potato, then I guess having lumps in it was a no-go for
a lot of people. So more in the technical of what they wanted, I think.
Yeah, so the first challenge is, of course, they have to make french fries. And it felt like, I guess they must have just told them, like, all right, your french fries have to be looking like almost like steak fries.
Yeah,
I guess.
Something like that.
Same kind of size, same kind of consistency.
I love french fries.
Oh, they're so good.
They're so good.
And I feel like the french fry is something that you can do a lot of different stuff with, and whether it be a waffle cut, you know, like you're saying, skin on, potato wedge, anything like that, curly, stuff like that. As opposed to the tater tot, which I feel like is, you know, there's not really much you can do to it itself. You have to add other things into it to kind of change it
up.
So we do the first battle there, and for the move on, so they after that we – I do like Katie. She took forever with this challenge. Like, she was just slice and slice. She cooked – they ate her potato, her french fries. She had only fried her for 1 minute and 49 seconds.
It's funny, in the chat, they're like, who is Katie? And one of the girls was, or who was saying this? Basically, she made the raw fries, but saying, between the dramatic and Katie only knowing how to cook air, carrots, and celery because she's a trainer, shake my head. You guys are so funny. I love our chat room. But yeah, so I just think she didn't have the, it seemed like she just didn't know how to do it.
But, you know, okay, so, I mean, her big thing is that she's talking about, like, I am a personal trainer. Yeah. I teach people how to eat healthy. So, I mean, cooking french fries, that's so foreign to me. I'm like, But as a personal trainer, I mean, people love to eat so many different things. And I think your job as a personal trainer is like there are healthy alternatives to the foods that you love.
So French fries are gluten-free and vegan.
Yeah, but I would think like, that she would like sweet potato fries.
Yeah, yeah.
So that is she why sweet not?
They're just as bad as regular French fries.
Are they?
Yeah, because
you're
healthier.
Frying them.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're not healthier. Sorry, Frank.
Well, I don't.
You don't like
so.
Them anyways.
Yeah, so that's fine. But good. Then I don't feel so bad that I'm like, all right, I'm deliberately eating worse. Whew, good.
But dude, yeah, I mean, it's a cookie competition. Like you're not. I feel like she tries to make her food healthy, and that's fine. But this is not. You're not. Feeding people who are on diets. You know, this is about the most delicious food. And the most delicious food is going to be the one that's fried.
Yeah, I guess because, I mean, ideally, if you win, you get a cookbook out of this. And mm-hmm. so you want to have some kind of hook to it. So I guess, but it's tough to have a hook. Like, I don't know. I feel like you're right. You've got to be able to cook everything.
Yeah. For this show, yes. Yeah. For this competition, yeah. I thought it was so interesting. I loved... the technical part of it and seeing people's abilities. I thought it was very telling.
Yeah, like Eric, I mean, just not with the knife skills at all. I mean, it was all over the place with Eric as he's trying to dice these tomatoes up or cut them into little things. But then like Brandy, she was just nailing it. I mean,
yeah, well, it was funny because she says she makes French fries for her kids at home, but they don't care if they're all the same size. So for her, she was used to cutting them in whatever, you know, size turned out. And I mean, that's how I feel like a lot of home cooks are. I know when I usually bake fries, so I usually don't fry them. But I just cut them and put them in, and they're not all perfect, but they're close. So that's what I think her mindset was. But she just really stepped up and to show the technical part of it.
Yeah, and baking, of course, makes it healthier than frying it, right?
Yeah, but I don't – like that's what they're asking in the chat. That she could have baked them, but did they have to fry them? I think they did.
I think that was part of the deal.
I think it was part of the technical part of it, yeah.
Because even as they were making them, they were saying, they were hoping that all the chefs would double fry them.
Yeah.
To get them really nice and crispy on the outside and still kind of soft on the inside.
You know, you can do that with like tortilla chips too.
Double fry them? Mm-hmm. I think, what can't you double fry? Is there anything that you can't double fry? There's like, no, do not double fry this thing.
Yeah.
Is there anything?
I can't imagine. Unless it's already over fried.
You can take something double fried again, and it's fine.
Whatever.
Yeah, let's just do it. Let's just coat that thing up. But the people that make it safe for this one are Brandy, David, Sean, and I feel like Nathan just got the pity one because he was basically the least worst out of the remaining five people.
Yeah.
Like, all right, I guess we'll give it to you, Nathan.
He keeps like sliding by.
Yeah, and because I feel like even when Kevin was like, at fries, like, do you think this is good enough to get you on there? I feel like. Everybody was going to say, that's a comment you say, like, when you haven't tasted, everybody else is there. And you're like, I don't know. This will give them maybe a chance. And then everybody else kind of really dropped the ball. So, all right, Nathan, I guess you go up. Great. The second skill test, as we mentioned, was mashed potatoes.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was interesting to see people's approaches for that. Not a lot of good work on them making those mashed potatoes.
I was surprised, actually. I thought Tenoria was going to have really good mashed potatoes.
Yeah, and I felt like it seemed like even Dan, because Dan usually can pull out some good stuff for that. But Eric, I like they went with his first, and he used a quarter cup of cream, and then he says, "I think that's a." Gordon makes it taste it. And he goes, "Yeah, I think it's a really good thing." Mashed potatoes.
I think he like really thought that they were good.
Oh, and then Gordon says,
"He seemed to." I don't think he's that kind of guy.
No, I don't think he was trying to BS Gordon.
I don't.
But then Gordon says, hey, I respect you because you're a guy's guy, but don't feed me this BS.
Yeah. I was kind of disappointed in that entire situation because based on Eric's expression, I kind of thought he thought they were good.
Yeah, I did not think it was. And that's tough because for something, I guess that's such a rough thing. Like you genuinely think something's delicious and then you've got some elite chef telling you, whoa, they're nope.
But if they would have put it through a ricer, how did they have chunks in it? Have you ever seen or you like used a ricer?
No, I have not.
I mean, I guess the only way is if the potatoes are really undercooked. But like you put it through and these like the holes are so small. It's almost like a strainer, like when you strain pasta. Mm-hmm. Like they're really small and you push it through and it breaks it down so that it's really there's no big chunks. I don't know how these people had chunks if they used a ricer.
Yeah, clearly they did not. I don't know. I guess I don't know how they did that, but they did not. They did something wrong. But I'd be
interested. Oh, sorry. They're saying in the chat, damn, Frank. Can't Nathan have a little love?
No. No love for me. Aww. No, no. Until you lose that jacket, Nathan, then a little love can come into your life for me. Eric says
mashed potatoes.
That's
yes.
right. Eric says that he'd give himself a 7 out of 10, which, you know, is all right. I mean, it's fine. It's a nice above average score. Gordon's like, yeah. No, he's like, you're being generous with yourself. Come on now. Turin's are delicious. Katie's, again, gritty. Yeah, Katie's just...
Well, that means she didn't cook them long enough. And no. I think, didn't they say there wasn't enough salt?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think she undersalts a lot, too.
Yeah, which I guess, you know, I get afraid of salt as a personal trainer. You don't want a lot of sodium in your diet. So salt's good, though.
Especially with potatoes.
Yeah, and then I remember watching, episode of Chomp where Jeffrey Zakarian was down there and he's like,
yeah, yeah.
And he made a comment about salt and he says, salt is the engine that drives the flavor.
It really is. You can't put salt at the end and just expect it to be good. You have to salt your way through.
Yeah, and that's that comment from him is always stuck in my head.
Mm-hmm. So like when you make pasta, do you make pasta often?
Not often, but you put salt in the water at the beginning, right?
And you want it to be salty like the sea. Salty like the sea. That's how salty you want it to be. So, yeah, I don't think I think because she's trying to hold back on the salt. I don't know. I think it's just she can't get past that health, which is okay, but she just can't get past it.
So I think I'm not even putting in enough salt in my water.
Do you taste your water before you put the pasta in?
I don't because we usually – don't you boil it while you're doing
it? Yeah, but I mean you take a spoon out, let it cool, and then –
I got to do that because it should be salty enough where you're like, ooh.
No, well, salty like, well, yeah, I guess if you think the sea. Yeah, salty like the sea.
Wait, because you're not drinking seawater.
Well, no.
you're getting yourself a swig of seawater. Mmm, delicious.
I know, but it just, when you're working with potatoes like they were, potatoes are very bland. They need a lot of salt. And the water needs to be salted.
Oh, I like the idea that I've not salted my water enough. I'm excited. I want to cook more pasta so I can salt water more.
Oh my God.
And so they get down to it there, and it's safe for Tenoria and Dan. Dan's, they said, again, some lumps and a little bit of chive in there, but overall, it was enough to get him a pass.
Okay.
So it comes down to Eric and Katie, and the final challenge is gnocchi.
Gnocchi.
Hard to make? I've never made it myself.
Yes. It's a fine line. Basically, it's potatoes. I mean, a lot of times ricotta or some kind of a cheese, flour. So if you add, there's really no way to measure, like have an exact measurement. Like when you, I know we always go back to baking and you always need certain amounts of this or this, but as you go to the biscotti. But with gnocchi, it's kind of how much water's in the potatoes is how much flour you add. Do you add the cheese? Do you not add the cheese? Do you add an egg? Like how much? There's different approaches to gnocchi. I make a sweet potato gnocchi that you wouldn't like. but I do make it with a brown butter and sage sauce, which is what they did in the show. They did a brown butter and sage is something that goes really well with potatoes. Even if it's not sweet potato, it goes well with regular potatoes. And that's technical too because it's very easy to burn butter. And the sage we found was really... you don't want to use raw sage because it can be very almost medicinal tasting. But when you cook it, it adds a nice earthy warmth to it. And if you fry it enough in that brown butter, it can be crispy and really it adds a lot of really great flavor and crunch, which is texture. So gnocchi, it's just that it can get really gooey. And I just recently tried making just Gordon Ramsay's gnocchi. I literally was watching his YouTube thing and doing it and mine did not turn out. So that's how it can be. Yeah. So I'm like, what did I do? I need to go back and try it.
And what part of that whole process from your doing his interpretation of the video, did you feel like, oh, wait, I'm lost?
I think I just didn't get my texture right. I think mine were too, like, wet, and I was scared to add too much flour. And then when I went to cook them up in the skillet, they just became gnocchi. Gnocchi. Gnocchi, gnocchi.
There's something that, I mean, I guess make anybody, like the process of making any sort of pasta is always cool to watch. Using the pasta machine if you're rolling it out. Mm-hmm. That's very cool. But there's something about gnocchi. When you get it down, you start cutting the portions out and make them kind of equal little pillows to cook. There's something about that that's a really cool process to watch.
When executed, they are so good. I love gnocchi.
And as we talk about the execution there, we see that Eric, as he's cooking, he keeps lifting the pan off the stove and just kind of futzing with it. And I felt like, I could understand why they're getting so irritated with him because you're like, you're taking it away from the heat.
The problem is when you take it away from the heat, it's like when you cook chicken. Like if you need to leave it down there and not lift it because you want it to get brown. And if you start lifting it, it's going to be uneven and some's going to stick. And that's kind of how you kind of have to have that same mindset with the gnocchi. It needs to be the same, like even temperature. Leave it there. Let it get brown because you're browning something. And if you keep you know what I mean? So that's why it could get gummy. You're working with flour and something that is like a liquid basically. And that means glue. Like flour and water equals glue. So if you are working with something like that, it's it can be really kind of gummy and gross, which is what I created.
You were lifting your pan off the stove?
I don't know what I was doing. Like, it just didn't work.
Now, my ignorance question here, since I am not a chef, Maria, is that's why we have her here. Besides, she's just lovely and talented. She answers all our food, my food questions. Brown butter. Is it just cooked butter or what do you add into it?
No. It's you can add things into it. I usually add maple syrup because it's really good. But you can. It's literally butter. And you cook it. You keep like swishing it around, and so the browning is the milk solids in the butter that become brown. But there's a fine line between brown and burnt. But if you get them brown to the right brown stage, it tastes really nutty. And just like, I mean, butter is just wonderful in general. And then you add that little bit of sage, so it adds that earthy herbaceousness. So it's a balance. You know, you get the really luxurious, rich, and nutty taste of the butter with the sage. And then, of course, the creamy, sort of pillowy gnocchi. It's a wonderful dish if you execute it correctly.
And I've had brown butter pasta before, but I never knew what the brown butter was.
It's just cooked butter.
It's almost like that version, like if you're going to make caramel. So with sugar, where you're kind of cooking it until
a lot of people add like milk to caramel. But you can do it with just sugar. Yeah.
Okay. It was just me trying to like sound like I knew what I was talking about. I failed in my analogy. I blew it. Thanks,
Frank was like Maria. This and I was like, boop.
Got a little spank down. Frank, do not talk about cooking.
No, you can do that.
Nope. Messing nerd. I will be quiet now. So it gets onto the end. They try it. Now, Katie, at the very end, she throws raw sage on. And they can't believe that she's doing it. Like, she's not going to really do that, is she? And she boom, 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 raw sage. And I thought at that moment, she lost.
Yeah, I did too.
Because I think you have to consider everything that you put on that. And she deliberately put that raw sage on there. That was a choice that she made at the end. Like, I'm going to put this on because I think this is a great compliment to this dish.
Yeah.
Eric, basically, they liked his. They said it was a good effort. He cooked the sage, lots of brown butter. He made the fried little sage leaves on there. They thought, that was great addition. But it could have used a little bit more cooking time, like you said. You know, he kept on lifting it off. It just wasn't browned properly on both sides.
And that was where it really, I think, sunk him. He didn't have any really brown on the outside.
No, they're
not really.
They're a little bit bigger than they normally would.
Yeah.
Which is like, all right, you know, if you're going to knock them just on size, I feel like that's like the lowest thing. I mean, okay, great. It's a little bit bigger than you want.
Yeah, but the bigger they are, the harder it is to like get them cooked, you know, consistently throughout or like evenly throughout.
And so when it comes down to them debating, they both say, as they said, the judges are making their decision. They said they both made fundamental mistakes, but ultimately, which is the worst one? And I really thought that Katie deliberately putting fresh sage on there would be enough to knock her out. And plus, I think she's been on the bottom more than Eric has.
Yes, I agree. I totally agree. I feel like she struggled a lot recently, right?
Yeah, and I feel like Katie, the time that she's done, I feel like Eric has done better, less worse and more better than Katie has done. I feel like she's been on the bottom more. And even when she's been safe, it, you know, like the dishes, nothing's been that remarkable.
Yeah.
And I feel like Eric's had a couple standout moments.
I think so.
And so when it came down to the elimination, though, I mean, at first I thought, all right, Katie is safe. All right, Katie's gone. And then it turns out Katie's safe.
And it's not that I don't like her because I think she has a great spirit. I just don't think she deserves to be there right now.
No, I mean, I never thought either her or Eric were going to win it.
Yeah.
But I thought out of the two of them, I thought, I don't know. I mean, it's tough to say like potential because I don't think we've seen anything. If we haven't seen anything by them at this point, I don't think we're going to see anything different that's going to make change our opinions. Like, they should be master chef.
Terry should not have gone home. I'm, like, still mad about that.
No. Terry absolutely should still be in the competition. Andrew should be in the competition as well. That you'd want to see those top people in there. And it's a shame that, you know, as this is a competition, some of those top dogs have to fall out along the way.
Yeah. Well, they're saying in the chat, even remember Katie did that struggle, not fried chicken. Or she did fried chicken without flour.
Just, oof, man, I don't know why. I wish Eric was still there because I don't think you're not going to see anything from Katie next week that's going to like, good thing we kept her.
Is that your prediction?
Katie's, I think it's, well, I guess we'll wrap up. This is it.
Your AfterBuzz TV predictions.
Yes. Yeah, so as Eric is eliminated, Gordon says like, well, I didn't think I'd be expecting you to ask you this early in the competition, but who do you think is going to win? And he goes out for Brandy. It says like, hey, she's kind of, and even Gordon says earlier in the first episode, like, you're a dark horse that's coming on strong. So
I don't even think she's a dark horse. Like, I feel like people know.
So given that, you have your, and with Terry gone, Are you changing your opinion that it's just Tenoria? Who do you see alongside Tenoria as possible finals two?
Oh, I don't know. I think Sean's really become a front runner, and I think maybe because everybody sees that. So I don't know if that's going to be this major, like, something tragic is going to happen where Sean goes home kind of thing or what it is. But I think I kind of am changing. I think maybe the final, I don't know if we're in the final yet, but the final would be Sean, who's like this Vegas guy, and Brandy, who's like the small town girl. So I was that would be an interesting, I think that would be interesting, an interesting challenge between those two. And because he has, you know, all this Vegas experience and she doesn't, and she's basically as good. She creates all these amazing things. So I think it would be interesting. But I think Tenoria is going to be up there. And then bottom, I mean, Katie has to go home and Nathan has to go home. Like, they're just, I don't think they're going to win.
No, I don't think so either. And so you wonder, like, I mean, and I guess that's, you have to think about every sort of food cooking show, is that are you really getting the best chef or are you getting the best game player?
That's true.
You know, and so the fact that Terry is out of the competition right now, Tenoria could possibly be knocked out depending on how the cards fall, on whatever ingredients you may have to work with on an elimination challenge. I mean, you could lose all those, and just because somebody had like the shrewd move of challenging you with something outside your comfort zone.
Right, exactly. Who are you rooting for?
I feel like I get a root for Tenoria, but okay. I mean, I feel like at the end, I think it's going to be Tenoria and Sean. I like the idea of like Brandy and Sean.
I'm rooting for Brandy, I feel like. Just because I feel like she's a small town school teacher. No, you know, I love that she's so capable.
There's something really, I do like the idea of like just cooking by intuition, you know, just by going outside of cooking, cooking by instinct, being outside her comfort zone. I do like that. I just wonder if it's enough to carry her through. I don't know. I think if you looked at everything, I feel like Tenoria and Sean, they have the more consistency to kind of take them further in the competition. But you don't know who's going to get something thrown at them and can get knocked out.
So who do you think's leaving next?
Man, I'd love it to be Nathan. Come on, Nathan. God, you got to go. Just so you can take out the jacket, because I bet it's hot. It's either Nathan or Katie. I'm leaning to, it's kind of, I mean, I feel like Katie, go ahead. Just knock her out, and then Nathan next. And then they can all start falling like flies.
Okay, Jazz in our chat said, Brandy in her hair, and Frank's favorite, Nathan.
Yes! All right, that's going to do it for this episode of MasterChef After Show on AfterBuzz TV. But as always, you can like us on Facebook, give us those 5 stars on iTunes, follow us on the YouTube chat, as Maria has it up every episode there. You can subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. And if you want to continue the conversation with us, even after the show is over, Maria, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter, at Maria Provenzano, and all my information will be there, and I've been loving the tweets. Thank you, guys.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And you can follow me on Twitter at HappyGoJackie. We'll see you here next week for another double dose of MasterChef goodness here on the MasterChef After Show.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.